Was George Washington a deist? And what is a deist? And why does it matter? We're going to talk about that right now on this portion of Vocal Point with Dr. Peter Lilback. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and Dr. Lilback and I had the privilege to write a book several years ago called George Washington's Sacred Fire. And Dr. Lilback, so great to have you back on the program.
Jerry, what a treat it is to be with you. It's always an honor to discuss one of our favorite topics together.
Sure. Okay, so was George Washington a deist? And I guess first I have to ask you, what is a deist?
Yeah, that's a good question. So let's step back and do a little bit of philosophy slash theology. There are two terms that are often used when we talk about the view of ultimate reality. Are we theists or are we deists? Theist, spelled T-H-E-I-S-T, and deist, spelled D-E-I-S-T. Technically, they could mean the same thing because it's just the Greek word theos, from which we get theology, meaning one who believes in God. And a deist is from the Latin word deus, that means someone who believes in God. So the distinction between the two is really a decision that's been made through the years to try to clarify a foundational question about how do we know God and who is he in our lives. So for a theist, it is someone who believes that God is a personal God, a God who communicates himself, that relates with the world that we're in. And so if we say we're a theist, we believe God is knowable, that he communicates, that he is active in history, that providence is an expression of his overruling of things for his ultimate purposes. Now, a deist, by technical use, means someone who believes that there is an ultimate cause of everything, a divine energy that is the creator. We might say if there's a big bang, there's a big banger, someone who got everything going. But this God, this deus in the deist thinking, is not relating to the world. He is impersonal as far as it goes to human beings. He doesn't hear prayer. He is not overruling things for his purpose. He's never communicated himself. And then obviously, if you really take deism seriously, if there was a historical Jesus, it's clear that he could not have been divine, and the God-man. He could only be, let's say, an elevated human being. So this is really a big question. And we ask, did our founders believe that God was knowable, that he communicated himself, that he was personal, that he's working in history? Or did they just need a philosophical first cause to get everything going? Sometimes popularly we say a deist is someone who believes in an absentee landlord God or a clockmaker God who makes the clock, winds it up, and then walks away to let it run down on its own and has no involvement. A theist believes that this God is someone who cares, that he has a purpose, and that even in the difficulties of life, there is something far greater that he's working on that we can be concerned about, and therefore we pray and believe and study the scriptures and actually believe that Jesus could be the God-man who came to visit us for salvation. So a very foundational distinction.
Sure. Okay, and before we hone in on George himself, George Washington, I do want to ask, how common was deism in colonial America at the time that George Washington was living?
Okay, well, so one of the things we have to do then is make a distinction sometimes between what we've called hard deism and soft deism. And this is a technical distinction, but it's helpful that if we were to try to say what are the leading tenets of a deist, we might say one who believes there's no providence, one who believes that prayer is useless, one who thinks the clergy is unnecessary and maybe even superfluous or even a burden, one who believes the Bible can only be a human book at best, not a divine revelation, and one who denies that Jesus is the Son of God who comes to us with eternal divine presence joined to human nature. Now, that would be a hard deist. An example of that would be the famous patriot who, at the end of the French Revolution, actually turns his back on this faith with this classic book called The Age of Reason. His name was Thomas Paine. Thomas Paine wrote Common Sense, a very powerful call for the need for independence in America. But after the French Revolution, he philosophically rejected the Christian faith and actually taught this. Now, you ask, how common was that view? Well, when Thomas Paine died, and he was died in America, George Washington would no longer speak to him, where once he had admired him as a great patriotic writer. And when they tried to find a place for him to be buried, nobody wanted him buried in their cemetery. They said they didn't want to have such a radical unbeliever participating in the burial communities of the different places from which he lived. So it shows that that kind of deism was really small and was very looked at askance by so many. Now, there's a softer kind of deism. Now, what's that? If there's a hard deism, like the Thomas Paine at the end of his career,
at the end,
a softer deism would say something like this. Well, we believe there is providence. God does act, is active in some way in history. Well, we believe that prayer can have its rule and role in our lives. We believe that there is value to pastors and clergy. But we're not sure that Jesus is divine, and we're not sure that the Bible is inspired, that it's a great book for educational purposes and wisdom and moral values, but not for salvation. And that division, which we call soft deism, sometimes today we would call early Unitarianism, a rejection of the triunity of God and a rejection of God's revelation. It would be Christianity with a small c, a Christian tradition but not a divine. That view would be more popular, and still it would be relatively small. Outward open Unitarianism, as we know it today, really doesn't come onto the scene until the early 1800s, and it begins to be present up in Boston. And to this day, that's been a strong Unitarian center through the years. So early on, these viewpoints that we're describing of deism, hard deism was almost unknown. Soft deism was pretty rare. Most people were in the historic Christian tradition, whether they were Anglican, Congregational, Presbyterian, Baptist, or some sort of Quaker, etc.
Huh. Well, it sounds like, based on that description, perhaps Ben Franklin might have been a soft deist, just based on the way you worded that. And one thing I do want to say about Thomas Paine, real fast, is that when he did write Common Sense in 1776, there are some pro-God statements in that work, and I think he personally changed. I don't think he was just writing things because he didn't believe them. He just came to, you know, lose his faith. I mean, that happens, you know, sadly. Sometimes people lose their faith. But any comments about either of those points, Franklin or Paine?
Yes, I would say, well, let's start with back with Thomas Paine. I would say that Thomas Paine was deeply influenced by the French Revolution. He actually was there as that was all going on, and one of the reasons he got so mad at Washington is that Washington did not act to get Paine out of France when all the difficulties, and so Paine became an open opponent and critic of Washington, and Washington just quietly ignored Paine and did not take him on, but he refused to speak with him. I think he was very troubled by his radicalism that he had developed, so he did change his mind. I think the early Paine had much more of a Christian tradition, and he was influenced by the radicalism of the French Revolution that impacted his theology and philosophy.
Isn't it interesting? It impacted his theology and his philosophy, and yet it was the outworkings of the French Revolution that caused him personal problems that George Washington wouldn't extricate him from. So it's interesting, you know, when unbelief is actually put into practice, a lot of times it's very ugly and leads to terrible and even fatal consequences in many cases.
Well, that's a very astute observation, and that's worth a show in its own right, Jerry. So, but I agree that we need to recognize that it was said, you know, it's been attributed to Solzhenitsyn, I think. It says, when man stops believing in God, anything is possible. Maybe it was Dostoevsky, one of the great Russian thinkers.
Yeah.
He said, when God is no longer present, then
everything
is possible because you become the absolute authority for whatever you want. And that is why radicalism is danger, because radical unbelief leads to radical unbelieving ethics, and the consequences are bloody and brutal.
Sure, you were going to say something about
century.
Yeah, absolutely. You were going to say something about Franklin, perhaps, too, about the soft deism?
You raised the question about whether Franklin would fit a soft Unitarian. And so I think it would be difficult to absolutely put him there, because he left open right to the end of his life, when he was actually asked by Ezra Stiles, the president of Yale College, who asked him at the end of his life, Dr. Franklin, I want to ask you two questions. One, can we put up a picture of you in our library? And he was said, sure, that's great. And then also he asked him, where do you stand with Jesus of Nazareth? Which is such a wonderful question.
Yeah.
Here's the president of Yale evangelizing Benjamin Franklin in a letter. I'm sure that that kind of evangelism has not happened for quite a few years, probably, by many college presidents in these days. But what is significant is that he said, I believe that salvation is by grace. Nothing that's eternal can ever be merited by anything that someone does in space and time. So he believed there was a need for salvation. He believed it was a gift of God. But then more narrowly, he says, the question you've asked me about Jesus of Nazareth, he said, I come from a long line of nonconformists. In our tradition, there has been a debate as to whether Jesus is God or whether he was just a great human being. And he said, at this late stage in my life, I'm not intending to take up that study, knowing that I'm going to find the answer to that before too long. Well, he was a very aged man by this stage. In fact, he dies 6 weeks later. And as far as I know, those are the last words he ever spoke on the question of whether Jesus was God or not. He never denied it. In fact, in his autobiography as a young man, it's interesting, he mentions how as he was printing books, he started printing deist literature, and he read it as he printed it. That's how he got educated. Every book he printed, he read. And as he was reading, he became persuaded, and he and his friends became deists. He said they traveled to London, and one of the things that began to trouble him is that he watched how his friends' ethics began to erode, how they would borrow money from him and they would never pay it back. And that really troubled him. And finally he says, if this is what deism leads to, dishonesty among friends, I don't want to be a deist.
Wow.
And so he said he rejected deism. We know that through the years he worshipped at Presbyterian churches, Anglican churches. He rewrote the Book of Common Prayer for his daughter so she would use it more. He wanted to send his son to Geneva so he'd be trained as a Presbyterian. He helped a Presbyterian, Reverend Hemphill, write his sermons. He knew the Bible. He quotes it at key moments at the Constitutional Convention. And, you know, so what exactly he was remains a question. But it is interesting this. He was a very close friend of George Whitefield. And there's many wonderful stories about Franklin and Whitefield's partnership and friendship in Philadelphia. But there is a point in his autobiography where Franklin says, George Whitefield always told me how important it was that I should have the new birth. That's the great preaching of George Whitefield. You must be born again. And Franklin writes, George Whitefield died believing that I had never experienced the new birth. So I'll let you decide, Dr. Newcomb, if you think that's enough of a Christian testimony. It clearly doesn't fit precisely a deist definition, but it sounds much more like an uncertain, pragmatic, seeking person who's open to Christianity, sure, but has never rejected it, but has never fully embraced it. So that's kind of the milieu I would put Franklin. I wouldn't quite put him in the soft deist category, although he leans that way, but he's not quite there yet either.
All right, we have about a minute, believe it or not, to wrap up but on this particular thing, so let's focus on George Washington himself, and if we need to, we can continue the discussion in the next podcast with you.
Okay, well, if you want to do it more, I'm pleased to talk about it. Very quickly, I answer it this way. Take those five distinctives of deism. None of them fit Washington. His favorite theological word is providence. Over 270 times he uses the word. Not talking about Providence, Rhode Island, about the doctrine of providence. Secondly, over 100 written prayers in his writings. He believed in prayer. He didn't reject it. Over 100 ministers that were part of Washington's life. 50 stayed at Mount Vernon. He wrote to 50. We can count them. He speaks of the Bible as holy writ and the Word of God, something Jonathan Edwards says no deist ever calls the Bible. And then finally, He says, unless we imitate the divine author of our blessed religion, we never can hope to be a happy nation. Jesus Christ is divine. He gives him the title of deity. And, of course, he regularly prayed and said the creeds that were in the Book of Common Prayer of the Anglican Church, which is distinctively Trinitarian, that honors the deity of Christ. I like to say, the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. Johnny Cochran, this implies to George Washington, the deist glove does not fit on the hand of faith of George Washington, which he used to fold in faith when he prayed to God.
Providenceforum.org. Thank you again, Dr. Lilbeck.
Great to be with you, Jerry.
Thank you now.